Welcome to Modern Signed Books. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their lives and writing with art book specialist, Roger Nichols. And don't forget to pick up a copy of your favorite books at bjbooks.com. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Our guest this morning picked up some interesting accolades on his way to a career as a New York Times bestselling author. Ace Atkins was part of the celebrated undefeated 1993 Auburn football team and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, showing him celebrating after sacking future Heisman Trophy winner Danny Werfel of the Florida Gators. Now, as a crime reporter at the Tampa Tribune, nominated for a Pulitzer for a series on a long-forgotten murder of the 1950s, and that, in turn, became the basis for his first novel. He's since written four novels about New Orleans blues historian detective Nick Travers, seven continuing Robert B. Parker Spencer's series, and now his eighth about the former U.S. Army Ranger and County Sheriff Quinn Colson, The Sinners, which actually goes on sale tomorrow as we record this. He lives in Oxford, Mississippi with his family, where he says he's friend to many dogs and several bartenders. Good morning and welcome.
Hey, good morning, Roger. Good to be here.
Yeah. You know, before we delve into Quinn Colson, The Sinners, I would be remiss if I didn't point out there's a nifty little clip of you on YouTube after winning the season-ending game with big rival Alabama, which you reference a popular candy.
That was you had to go deep in the YouTube archives to find that one. That was quite some time ago. No, that was a lot of fun. That was a fun season. But yeah, I want to, you know, say that that was, yeah, I think it's less ironic as the time goes by, but at that time I was referencing sitting around with my grandkids enjoying a nice Werther original.
I love that. And I don't see why that Werther's people didn't pick that up for a giant commercial, but that was their loss.
You would have thought that I would have. I think if that had happened, that's now coming up on 25 years ago, if that had happened today, I would have expected, you know, Werther's to send like a truckload of candy for the free plug.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll work on it. Maybe we can get something even at this late date.
You're getting it going, yeah.
Well, you know, we're always curious about origin stories. And was it the Pulitzer nomination that sparked the decision to become a novelist for you?
You know, I had always wanted to be a novelist, even from the time I was in high school and, throughout college. And that was really the ultimate goal for me, was to really write the kind of books that I'm writing now. And that's what I was reading at the time. I was reading books like Elmore Leonard and Robert B. Parker and John D. McDonald. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just can't start out of college being a novelist. You have to start somewhere. And for me, it was the newsroom. That's the place that I wanted to start. And that's a place where a lot of my heroes had begun. And so I was fortunate enough to get a job at the time, the St. Petersburg Times, and then on to the Tampa Tribune. And it really was the foundation of my career. It taught me a lot about writing. It taught me a lot about knowing the world that I was living in. And so it was perfect training.
You know, there are a lot of us former newspaper writers who, you know, had three chapters of an unfinished novel on our desk drawer, but you're one that took it all away. What would the Pulitzer thing open the key to maybe having a publisher listen more to you?
You know, actually, that came after I was published. When I started that series, which was a big series. It was long. It was a seven-part series. It was very unusual for our paper to publish it. But I had already published two novels. And I think it was really that story that I was writing was kind of the combination of bigger storytelling and, you know, more investigative journalism. And so those two worlds kind of collided to write that piece. But it was something, was born out of following those two tracks as a writer. But as far as, you know, having that novel in your desk drawer that you never finish, I was very dedicated. I was only in my mid-20s. I was, you know, when I was seriously writing the book in my early 20s. And I used to spend every weekend that I was off from the newspaper sitting in my apartment in Tampa, Florida, working on that book. And so I didn't have very much of a social life. I spent the weekend sitting around, you know, working on this novel, but it eventually paid off.
Great. And I have to say it paid off in multiple ways, because you were asked to continue the Spencer series for Robert B. Parker. And that's an amazing accolade.
It's been a terrific thing. And I was really honored to do it. Parker was somebody that I really idolized, and he was somebody that, you know, I certainly studied as a young writer, and somebody that I really thought was one of the best in the genre. And, you know, when this came about to, you know, continue his work, I was really honored to do it. And it's not something that I would want to do for any other writer. It's not something that I would want to pick up for somebody that I wasn't a fan of or somebody that I wasn't crazy about. I mean, it's got to be a real personal mission. And there's nobody for me like Robert B. Parker. So when I was asked by the family to continue the books, it was you know, something that I wanted to do and something that I continue to enjoy doing.
I noticed that in the publication schedule, you're pretty much turning out, on an average, one a year of Quinn's and one a year of the Parker stuff. So where do you find time to sleep now?
That's a very good question. I don't. It's constant work on the books, and it's fine. I mean, I have an office. I live here in Oxford, Mississippi. I work, you know, every day during the week, and I keep that going. I don't have a lot of time to do book conferences or, you know, extended vacations and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a great job to have. I mean, the hardest thing for me to do is two series are so different. Of course, Boston is very, you know, the iconic setting for the Spencer books and very specific to that region. And then where I live here in Mississippi is, you know, much more true to my lifestyle, my day-to-day, which is the Quinn Colson books being set in North Mississippi and having a very much a Southern flair. So the toughest thing, I think, for me to do is to use the right accent on the right day that I'm writing those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're so very different. Now, some artists will tell me that they actually are far more inspired when they operate under a set of constraints, and in doing somebody else's established characters, you have some sideboards on that.
Yeah, I mean, there are. I mean, I guess, you know, I have an added thing, even though the Spencer books are a little bit smaller in scope and a little bit more intimate because I'm really telling those stories from the point of view of Spencer, where the Quinn Colson books are told from the point of view of the bad guys and our hero Quinn Colson and the myriad of characters that inhabit this world of Tippahaw County, which is this fictional southern county. The added constraint I have from writing Spencer is what would Bob Parker do? And I don't look at it as what would Ace Atkins do in this thing? How is he going to write it? You know, just from my point of view, but really how Parker would approach that. So having the added layer of looking at it from another storyteller's point of view is a little bit tricky. It's a challenge, but it's also a challenge that I kind of enjoy as well. It's a bit like a game.
Well, somebody else that writes at the same kind of frequency, David Baldacci, we've talked to a number of times, and he says he finds it refreshing to move from one character to a different character in various series that he's operating. So I assume that that's, you know, kind of like resting by changing your pace.
I think so. I mean, you know, it's sometimes you're in a groove and you want to continue with that character after you finish that book. But I do think that it stops, you know, it is a refresher. It's like a palate cleanser, if you will. You're working on one story and you're really into it and you finish it. But sometimes you need a little break from those people and that character. And so about the time that I've written, something set in the sweltering summer of the Deep South, it's time to go up and enjoy the crisp, cool air of Boston and the autumn. And I think it's a nice change of pace. And about the time I'm finished with talking about Boston, it's time to go back to the Deep South. So over now, we're coming up on 10 years that I've been writing these two characters. I think they have worked very well hand in hand.
I think this interesting thing about, you should get into the centers because that's why we're talking about today. But it starts with a really nice flashback to when Quinn's late uncle, Hamp, I love the name you come up with these people, busted Heath Pritchard for growing marijuana and sent him up to Parchman for 23 years. And now he's back and a whole bunch of complications ensue from that. That felt like a fun scene to write, that early scene in the book.
Well, we kind of, from the very beginning, I wrote a book called The Ranger that came out in that would have been 2010. And, you know, I always talked about the larger scope of this county in Tippahaw County. And one thing that brought Quinn back, he had been in the military, he'd been a U.S. Army Ranger and had been in war for the last 10 years and came home for his uncle's funeral. And that was his uncle's Uncle Hamp. And I always, he's been mentioned throughout the series, but coming on the eighth one, I kind of wanted to go back in time and see him in action and see what he was like and what he was encountering. And of course, you know, as we know, events in the past continue to, you know, trigger the domino effect in the future. And that certainly is the case with this convict, this bad guy, this drug dealer, Heath Pritchard. And so I wanted to start things off going back to 1993. And I think that that's something that I continue to do in the series, whether just going back to talk about events from the past in Tippecanoe County or actually showing them. But I like that connection. I like that connection to family. I like that connection to time, and I like that connection to the larger world. So, yeah, that was a fun scene to write.
And, of course, when Heath comes back, he finds his two nephews have been enlarging and improving the business. Of course, he wants to take over. They're not real happy about that. But that's not the only thing that's going on here. There's all sorts of things going on with the Mississippi Mafia and various things going on with elements within the criminal community battling each other and causing all sorts of problems. It's fascinating plotting on this. You must have a lot of fun with that, too.
Well, you know, I don't think I'm going to get any accolades from the Mississippi Chamber of Commerce's around here. They're thrilled about some of the ways that I show what's going on. But that was kind of the idea going back to those books that I really enjoyed, whether Robert Parker, John D. McDonald, or Raymond Chandler. Most of those books were being set in urban areas, and they were being showing things that were happening in the big city. And I thought, boy, there's just as much intrigue that's going on here in the Deep South and things that are going on down here. And so, you're talking about all those different threads. Those are things that happen down here. I've got friends that are in law enforcement. I've got a good buddy of mine who's a sheriff in a small county here in Mississippi. And we talk about these things. And there are always story ideas. There's always things that are happening. And I use those stories to feed the books. I have a great deal of fun, really sometimes taking on current events or things that have happened recently in North Mississippi, and it's a lot of fun.
I can see that, because it comes through in your writing. And one of the things I really enjoy now, as somebody who works at a radio station and is very involved with music, is the fact that if I were to put this in a movie, I already have a soundtrack, because you've listed all the stuff they're listening to most every time. I love that.
I think I do that also, I love music as well, and music really feeds the writing. And so when I'm writing, occasionally I am, or a lot of times I'm listening to music, and often that music will bleed into the narrative, will bleed into the story. Unfortunately, if I don't use too much of the lyrics, I don't have to pay for the rights to the lyric. But just talking to it, I think for people that know music, who know what I'm talking about, they get a lot out of it. I think that people who aren't into music probably don't quite understand what I'm talking about. But I think there is a soundtrack to these books, and there is something which goes back to, larger themes that I like to discuss, and that really comes from kind of classic country music. As you probably know from reading the Sinners, I'm not a big fan of modern country music, as I'm not really a big fan of, some of the modern, ideas that, are peppered in the, in some of the areas that I write about. But I think that, for me, going back to, Charlie Pride and Waylon Jennings and, mm-hmm. All these great, icons of country music, I think really does feed into the feel of the series.
And this is the first time I've ever seen an author's webpage with a playlist for Quinn on it,
on it. I wasn't going to mention that. That seemed, too much self-promotion there. But yeah, on my website, there is a playlist for people who have Spotify. What we're talking about right now, what kind of music feeds into the series, it's right there. And you can see many of the songs that have feature roles in the books.
Yeah, Waylon and George and Tammy, Charlie Pride, Loretta. Our main station is a country station, so I'm with you. And particularly, there's always a danger in assuming the viewpoints expressed by a character, those of the author. But in this one particular thing, since you mentioned it, there's a radio playing, and I quote, "Some of that modern country with the electronic beat, auto-tuned vocals, an attempt at rap that Quinn calls, quote, god-awful and worse." And I suspect that might be your actual viewpoint there.
That is definitely the author's viewpoint going into the character's mind, for sure. Yeah, no, I am no fan of modern country music. I like rap music, and I like country music, but I don't like them together.
Amen to that. You put them in the blender and see what happens, kind of stuff. I wandered away from but I think it informs that, because a lot of the commentary, you have at one point they're listening to Copperhead Road by Steve Earle, which is like a perfect commentary for what they're doing at the time. So I think it's like in some ways, a Greek chorus adding additional kind of context to it.
Yeah, I think, there are things that, in the Deep South, there are things that, can be a great embarrassment. And there's also some things that really, are wonderful things about the Deep South. And I think that music is certainly one of them. The other one is food. And I think that those two things, you know, talk about music, talk about food, and some of the, you know, some of the good stuff that's going on down here is fun to write about. And it certainly is something I think that does add a feel and a tone to the series that I do hope people get.
And I think that one of the things that you have mentioned is that you enjoy, as you've said, taking the longer view, seeing a very long arc here and tying all the books together so they form a seamless narrative. And I think that's something that people really enjoy.
I hope so. You know, I think that some people are used to, especially in books that, you know, have a continuing main character or hero that they're following. They're used to occasionally, you know, coming to each book with a sense of amnesia, not thinking about what happened in the previous books. And I always was frustrated growing up and being a fan of these books where something that would happen that would be, to a normal person, a major life-changing event or something that certainly would be impressed upon that character's mind that would change them. And then the next book you pick up, you feel like they don't even remember what happened in the previous book. And I think that was done certainly for marketing reasons and drawing people in. But I think that, you know, I'm very inspired by, you know, TV shows, especially TV shows right now that have that long story arc, that have a continuing narrative, when I think they feel that people are sitting down and binging those shows, and they can go from one episode to the next one feeling like that larger world is tying in. And I also think that readers feel a little bit of some kind of reward. You know, if you're going to read all 8, you know, Quinn Colson novels, you know, I like to give the readers something and reward them for understanding what happened in the past and seeing how it affects the future, and storylines that I may have dropped in, you know, the third book that come to fruition in the sixth book. I think that gives readers a sense of accomplishment. And I think that modern readers are a little bit more interested in continuing a series all the way through.
Oh, I should hope so. And I should mention that, by the way, kind of an added tension all the way through this is Quinn's getting married and this planning, and it's just one more complication in his life.
Yeah, nothing like a wedding to add a lot more tension, even though when you have, you know, drug dealers running amok and a murder to solve and you know, all kinds of mayhem in your county. Yeah, the book begins with, you know, Quinn really expecting a nice, quiet few weeks so he can finally, you know, he can get married, he can settle down, and of course everything goes to hell. And for me, I think I was really inspired with that storyline, you know, going back to, as you probably can tell in the books, inspired a lot by great Westerns. Mm-hmm. And I loved the idea of the, you know, the wedding and the idyllic life that was on the other side for Gary Cooper in High Noon. Mm-hmm. And so this is a little bit different. You know, High Noon picks up at the, you know, after the wedding. And here, this is, you know, a couple weeks before the wedding.
I think it's fascinating. Unfortunately, we have to let you go because you've got other interviews scheduled, but I certainly want to thank you for spending a great deal of time with us and highly recommend the book. Our guest is Ace Atkins. The book is The Sinners. And if you enjoyed our interview with Ace Atkins, remember, you can pick up signed copies of his latest book and others at VJ Books. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Roger. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Take care. And please write more.
Thank you. I'm on it.
Thank you for listening to Modern Signed Books. Make sure to follow and comment on who you would like to hear next. Feel free to check out our other author interviews. And visit vjbooks.com to pick up signed copies of all of your favorite books.